Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Hold for Hold Pro Wrestling Podcast, bringing you the best of pro wrestling one hold at a time. I am your host, Jaime. We have a stacked show, and I know I say this often, but this feels just monumentous. We are deep in a humongous scandal that I'm glad I waited until our normal recording day to do this podcast, because I wanted to jump the gun on Monday to discuss the CM Punk news specifically. But now that I've waited, a lot more information has come out, giving us a much more well-rounded picture. We don't have to speculate as much. And this is going to be just a big episode. Not only are we talking CM Punk, we have Malakai Black having a A&W contract dispute of sorts. We have a commentator from WWE leaving the commentary desk, as well as we're reviewing all the pay-per-views that happened this past weekend. That's Clash of the Castle, Worlds Collide, All Out. We have Monday Night Raw to talk about, AEW Dynamite. So this is going to be a big episode, to say the least. But let's start things off with the story that has taken the IWC by storm. The IWC being the Internet Wrestling Community, if you know you don't know what that is. Personally, this story has been very intriguing since, you know, before All Out, as we've been kind of covering here on the show, CM Punk having some issues backstage with Hangman Page and the Elite and possibly Colt Cabana. And now it all came to a head at All Out. They really did not push any of that backstage drama in the build to All Out. They just made this about Punk representing Chicago and Mox being Mox, essentially, for that match. It wasn't until after All Out went off the air and we had the media scrum, that is a pretty traditional thing for AEW to do after their pay-per-views. This media scrum, though, quickly escalated into something that I don't think anyone was expecting. CM Punk is the first person you see as you are watching this media scrum, which is still up on their YouTube. You can watch this entire thing. I did. It's just mesmerizing. Unfortunately, the audio for it, it's like super low. Everyone sounds like they're Darth Vader. But if you want a better video, you could watch Denise Salcedo's video that she actually recorded while she was there at the time of their filming it. So let's just, I guess, jump into this, right? Punk's media scrum. Let's read some quotes, and then we will talk about everything else that came after. So Punk opened up the media scrum by basically just unprompted, immediately jumps into Colt Cabana stuff. He says, if you fancy yourself a journalist, sorry, let me preface this. There's going to be a lot of cussing in this. So if you are sensitive to that, I'm very sorry. I'm probably just going to cuss through this. I would normally try to censor myself, but I think it's just easier to do it this way. Here we go. If you fancy yourself a journalist, even if it's for this silly world of professional wrestling, you have journalist integrity, people who report things mostly that are bullshit and slanderous lies against myself. If you are friends with somebody, you blew my spot. If you're not friends with him, I apologize. He then continues on. You should probably disclose who you're friends with. I haven't had anything to do with Scott Colton in almost a decade. Probably nothing to do with him even longer than that. It's fucking unfortunate that I have to come up here and use my time on this fucking business. The fact that I have to sit up here while we have irresponsible people who call themselves EVPs who couldn't manage a fucking Target, and they spread lies and bullshit put into a medium that I got, or put into the media that I got somebody fired. I have fuck all to do with them, want nothing to do with them, don't care where he works, don't care where they sleep, where they eat. The fact that I have to get up here and do this in 2022 is fucking embarrassing. If y'all are at fault, fuck you. If not, I apologize. What did I ever do in this world to deserve an empty-headed dumb fuck like Hangman Adam Page to go out on national television and fucking go into business for himself? For what? What did I do? I didn't do a goddamn thing. I'll tell you why I'm upset about it. If you're an EVP, you don't try to middle your top babyface. Try to get your niche internet audience to hate on them for some made-up bullshit rumor. It really pisses me off stepping on your own dick trying to fucking make money, sell tickets, fill arenas. We're acting like they're in fucking Reseda. So there's a lot there. And these are cherry-picked quotes. I didn't want to get into the full thing because, one, you might as well just watch it. So the first part, this whole part about I don't care where he eats or where he sleeps, that is all referring to Colt Cabana. Now, the reason he addressed this is because there was rumors that were, I'm pretty sure, shut down that Colt Cabana being signed to Ring of Honor now instead of AEW was because of some influence CM Punk had. From what I remember, that wasn't really the case. Everyone kind of knew that wasn't the case. It was just like a bad rumor that somebody was reporting on, but no one that I trust. So that was the whole first bit. Now he quickly transitions into accusing the EVPs of spreading this rumor, which we can assume to be the Elite because of evidence we'll talk about later. And so then he starts just bashing them about not being able to manage a target, which managing a target is extremely hard work, so I don't know why you would say that. But yeah, so that's that second portion. And then he throws Hangman Page in there just like as a tail end there. There's some more stuff I didn't include in here. He basically shames Hangman Page for not asking veterans for help, which how can you realistically even tell if he's doing that or not? But yeah, and then the whole line about Reseda, that's a line to the Elite, who famously worked at PWG, which was based out of Reseda, California, for a while. This is a mess. Like, watching it live, that was a absolute mess. And if you were on Twitter the last, like, couple days, you understand the reaction people had to this. It's pretty immediate that you realize this is not a work. The way he goes into detail about the lawsuit between himself and Colt Cabana is petty and real, and genuinely uncalled for. Didn't have to go into a whole recap about what happened with their lawsuit and just disparaging Colt Cabana for having a shared bank account. I didn't like that at all. I think this whole thing just makes him look so terrible. It's the worst thing he could have done, to be honest. Especially when his whole like wrapping up thing was like, you know, if you have a problem with me, come talk to me. And he's doing the exact opposite of that. He's just spilling all the dirty laundry out there. And we're going to find out what happens when people try to talk to him about this. But yeah, that media scrum was crazy. Do not think it's a work in the slightest. This is real life, really ugly stuff going on here. And it really made me not want to see Punk on my TV for a long time. Like, if this is how you act as a grown man, that's really embarrassing, man. That's like, it's unprofessional at the least, you know? But moving on from the media scrum itself, we're going to talk about the aftermath. So following this media scrum, it's been reported that there was a brawl between CM Punk and his trainer or friend Ace Steel and the EVPs he called out being Kenny Omega and Matt and Nick Jackson. So there are reports going around right now that are trying to gather both sides. So we can talk about that, I guess. Let's start with with CM Punk's side of things. And this is from sources close to Punk. This is apparently not from Punk himself. But essentially, they're claiming that the Elite came to their locker room and basically broke the door down, like kicked it down. And that's how the brawl started, with CM Punk throwing punches after that. And then they claim someone was going after the dog. And when they noticed that, Ace Steel ended up biting Kenny Omega, who was picking up the dog. And so that's their part of the story here. Now, there is some factual truth that, or at least there are some things that seem factual because they appear in both places, in both the Elite story and CM Punk story. But the main difference here is how the fight was initiated, with Punk claiming that the Elite knocked down their locker room door, while sources close to the Elite are saying that they did not do such a thing, and they brought in Christopher Daniels and another, another high-ranking official in the company. The Elite brought them in, so that way there's like a neutral party there. They did not knock the door down. They walked in, and as soon as they walked in, CM Punk started throwing sucker punches at Matt Jackson. Then Nick and Ace Steel got into it. Kenny Omega tries to grab CM Punk's dog to get him out of the room because it's chaos in there. And that's when Ace Steel pulls Kenny Omega's hair and bites him. So that's a lot, right? That's a lot to think about. So the only facts that we can point out from these two sides of the story is that Ace Steel definitely bit Kenny Omega. There was a dog in the room, and there were some punches thrown from CM Punk. Now, because of this brawl, it was reported before Dynamite yesterday that the Elite, which includes Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, Pat Buck, Christopher Daniels, Michael Nakazawa, and Brandon Cutler had all been suspended by AEW for their roles in the backstage altercation following the All Out media scrum. And at that time, we did not know what was going to happen to Punk and Ace Steel. There was nothing really being said there. It's reported they're either going to be suspended or let go by the company. Personally, this is such a messy situation because personally, what I would have done is definitely suspended the Elite for sure, but also Ace Steel would probably be going. You can't be biting people, man. You really can't be biting people. This is such an ugly situation, and it makes CM Punk look so bad. But we got more of an update, right? So we were waiting now to see if this Punk stuff was if any Punk news was going to drop. And what dropped is that he is injured. He has a tricep injury that he suffered from a dive during his match with Jon Moxley, which you could see in the media scrum. Punk was icing his tricep throughout it. And it's estimated he's going to be out of action for 8 months. This is still doesn't answer the question of what punishment does Punk have for his role in this brawl. He has to vacate the title because of this injury, which, you know, would have happened anyway, seemingly. You know, whether or not the brawl happened or whether or not Punk said anything at the media scrum, he would have had to relinquish his title again. So that's one. So you can't use that as the punishment is what I think I'm trying to address here. It's going to be very interesting the next month or so if we hear anything about Ace Steel being punished, if Punk's going to be punished any further, because he definitely should. This is so crazy. This is like, I'm a 98 kid, right? So I was born after the screw job. This is what I'm thinking people felt when the screw job happened, and hearing all the reports about the backstage altercation between Bret Hart and Vince McMahon, which still lingers to this day about like the truth behind what happened there. So it's just a very interesting story. It's very dramatic. It lends itself to pro wrestling. It's such a pro wrestling story. But yeah, that's everything with the Punk story. Personally, man, I don't get it. I really don't get it. I don't understand Punk's beef with Hangman. That's like the most confusing part to me, because Eddie Kingston cut the same promo on Punk, and he didn't say anything to him. MJF too. MJF also cut pretty much the same promo on Punk, but because it's Hangman, I don't know. From all accounts, from everyone on the internet, everyone who's interviewed Punk, Hangman, people who hang out with him, like, he seems like a great guy. I just don't know, you know, but that's not my space to cover, I guess. So yeah, we're gonna move on now. I think that's enough of this story. I think we're gonna get more of it anyway. We gotta talk about Dynamite later, so we're gonna talk a little bit about the immediate repercussions of this. But moving on, we have an AEW talent that is seemingly out of the company. It was reported today that Malakai Black was granted his conditional release from AEW. Now, I don't know what the conditions are, but I'm guessing it's you can't work for WWE. I'm thinking that's the case, at least for a certain amount of time. And with conditional releases, it seems like that's a longer period of time than being granted your release of the typical like 90-day, 30-day deal. This is probably going to be a year, I'm guessing, or at least close to. So yeah, Malakai Black officially out of AEW, or at least not contracted with them anymore. Now, I want to move on to the saddest news of the week. Pat McAfee has officially announced that he has to step away from the commentary desk for a little while as he agreed to be a full-time member of the ESPN College Game Day cast. It's a great opportunity for the guy, honestly. And I wonder if he was using the last two SmackDowns as his audition, because he kept playing with that Madden pen. But yeah, he's going to be heading out for a little bit. Everyone on Twitter that responded to him, WWE, everybody else, they were just saying, you know, he'll be back, basically. He's always part of the family. I'm glad for that because I love Pat McAfee. I literally was watching Clash of the Castle with my parents this past weekend, and I told him, I was like, I wish McAfee was calling this show, because him calling that Walter Sheamus match would have been fantastic. But anyways, that's sad news, right? Sad face. Let's move on. I have a couple of WWE stories that aren't necessarily like huge groundbreaking things. It's just I just want to continue highlighting how different the Triple H era of things are going compared to the reports of how communication worked under Vince. So we have Becky Lynch. She was on Ryan Sands Out of Character. She was discussing her decision to turn babyface again. And I have some quotes here. She said, "I talked to Hunter a little bit before, and he was like, how do you feel about being a heel? And I was like, honestly, it's fun. I like it. I feel I'm maybe more naturally inclined to be a babyface. People like me better as a babyface. Clearly, I'm doing my job if they don't like me. I'm just great, lads. I'm just great." He goes, "I feel like we're swimming upstream, keeping you as a heel." And I said, "Yeah, I agree." Then as creative was laid out, and I was like, that sounds awesome. Hell yeah. So just a little snippet there to see the communication between such a high-ranking star like Becky Lynch and that character change that we got to see at SummerSlam and the Monday night after, you know. And I think the way they wrapped up her heel turn or her babyface turn before her, you know, injury, I think even just SummerSlam night, I think they did just the perfect way to turn her face and still keep her, you know, kind of respected as a almost like a tweener, but yeah, anyways, though, really good stuff. Then we also have some news. This is in relation to like the communication style. Triple H confirmed Brock Lesnar's walkout. He was on BT Sport with Ariel Helwani, and he just confirmed Brock Lesnar did indeed walk out when he learned of Vince McMahon stepping down. If you will remember, that happened on a Friday. And they were having SmackDown. Brock was heavily involved in the build towards SummerSlam. Yes, towards SummerSlam. And so, Triple H, here's some quotes here. "There's some truth to it. You have to understand Brock Lesnar's relationship with Vince. If you look at Brock's relationship across combat sports, he has a relationship with Dana that's a certain way. He has a relationship with Vince that's a certain way. Vince is the devil he knows. Brock is inherently not a trusting person. It's just how he is. He doesn't like people. In the moment when you hear Vince is out, you think, what's going to happen? I'm out of here. There was a moment of that, nothing more, nothing less. Not like he looked at it as, I don't like anyone else here. I don't trust anybody else here. It was a moment of, I'm going to walk on this, and then we have conversation. He comes back. I have a great relationship with Brock. Have we had issues over the years? Yeah. At a certain point, he was a talent, I was a talent. Talent all get along to some degree, but there's also a very real rivalry between all of them. They all want to be the best. Everybody wants to be the best and be in the spotlight. I'm sure there was some level of mistrust or those things. I have a relationship with Brock. Brock is a, let me just deal with these people over here. If he wants something, he calls Vince directly. When he wanted a deal, he called Vince directly. There was a point in time when he first came back that he was dealing with me directly because he and Vince weren't getting along when he first came back, over some past stuff. Over time, he rekindled his relationship with Vince, and now everything goes through Vince. It's just a different time now, and now that he's had a moment to digest it, he digested a little, came back to the building. We did business that night. We had long conversations about what was next. He liked what he heard, and he liked how he's been dealt with, and it's all good. Again, it's just a really good highlighting point. One, it's very interesting because Brock Lesnar is one of those mystic people, right? He's often built that way, but also just like if you keep up with any of the personal stuff, he does seem like a guy who keeps to himself. He doesn't like to deal with fluff. He just wants to get right to business, and he wants business to be right for him, which you can't really blame him for. But it's cool to hear, you know, the real interaction that happened that night, and you could definitely tell, or like you could definitely see it happening, play out in your head. Brock learns in the news. He probably just steps out of the stadium. He's like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what this guy has in mind for me. Like, I'm already here for this thing, and now it's going to get pushed to the side maybe. But Triple H seemingly was able to communicate what was planned, you know, like what his creative was going to look like, what changes may or may not be happening, probably assuring him that not much was going to change for Brock. So yeah, really good stuff. Let's move on to the reviews, okay? We have so much to cover, you guys. There were three shows that I did my predictions for in episode 58. I didn't realize that I had over 50 episodes already. I forgot to mention that like the last couple times, but yeah, it's pretty cool. Technically, it hasn't been a year yet. I looked at the date. I think we're heading up on it. It's in October that we'll hit a year of Hold for Hold. If you've been listening that long, thank you for that. That's very nice of you. If you've been listening for any amount of time, even 2 minutes, thank you for that. It's really nice of you to do that. But anyways, let's get on to the review. Okay, so we're going to start with Clash at the Castle. This was a very good show. I think everyone expected it to be, right? They're in the UK for the first time in, I think, 30 years. Like I said earlier, I watched this with my parents, and they were both shocked at how many people were there. And so was I, frankly. It looked packed. And they gave the official number, you know, in quotations official. You know how WWE likes to stretch it. But 62,000 fans in attendance for the show. That's crazy numbers. That's crazy numbers. But this show kicked off with one pre-show match featuring Austin Theory and the Alpha Academy taking on Madcap Moss and the Street Profits. Really fun little match here. Great spot to finish this match. Dawkins gets Gable up on his shoulders on the outside of the ring, and then Ford does a plancha blockbuster on the outside onto everyone. They throw Gable back in the ring. Ford hits a frog splash for the win. Very fun match. I love Chad Gable so much. He is consistently one of my favorite people. Shoosh, thank you. I love it. It's simple. It's good. The opening contest on the main card saw Damage Control, which is their official name now. They have it in their lower thirds. Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky taking on Alexa Bliss, Asuka, and Bianca Belair. By the way, Io Sky has been the easiest name for me to remember. It's so natural. It's not something stupid that Vince McMahon would have picked. God knows what he would have picked, but very natural name. Anyways, this is just like a really good match. It set up a lot of chemistry between Damage Control. Like, you can tell they're working on it. So everything wasn't super smooth, but they're working on it. Told a good story. Surprisingly, Belair ate the pin here after everyone hit their finish on her. Last being Io Sky hitting that beautiful moonsault from the top rope for the win for the baddies. They get the win here. This definitely felt like it's setting up Bayley and Bianca for their match eventually down the line. I wouldn't mind seeing Io Sky and Dakota Kai taking on Asuka and Alexa Bliss some more, but I also wouldn't be shocked if Asuka and Alexa Bliss are kind of done with this team up and we might see them split. Wouldn't shock me because I feel like Alexa Bliss especially has been saying she feels bored of this character. She basically has no character, and I think she wants to relish in something a little bit meatier, and I feel like they could do that for her. After this, we get shown that Tyson Fury is at ringside. There's like a video package of him talking to Drew McIntyre backstage about the match. And then they cut to a great video package highlighting Bret Hart taking on Davey Boy Smith in their 1992 SummerSlam match. I had to inform my dad that Davey Boy Smith was actually cracked out during that match. But still, fantastic contest nonetheless. And then we're shown the family of Davey Boy Smith are there, as well as Bret the Hitman Hart appearing on WWE television. Who would have thunk it? Following this, we get the match of the week for sure. But it's nearing my match of the year contender for sure. I may have to rewatch it to make sure. I said sure too many times there, sorry. It's the WWE Intercontinental Championship match between Volter and Sheamus. But before we talk about the match, Imperium is back together. Giovanni Vinci made his return into Imperium, coming out with the lads, and they have like a brawl. The members of Imperium and the brawling brutes, they all start fighting on the outside. Pete Dunne hits a beautiful moonsault off the second rope to the outside, and they basically leave after that. So we get a one-on-one match that's hard hitting, and it's everything you expect from a Walter match, right? But I will just argue this: it was a very important Walter match. It was the match that Walter needed to have on the main roster to really display that just great match formula that this guy has. Even though it's not a Tyler Bate, Pete Dunne, Walter match, this Sheamus match was really good. It's probably in my top five of Walter matches I've seen, behind those two guys and behind Dragunov Walter 1. I'd say Sheamus has a pretty good case there. I like this match more than I liked Walter versus Dragunov 2. I just felt like this was just so well done. Great spots. Please go out of your way to watch this. My mom and dad were both just shocked. They had never watched Walter. I told them beforehand, I was like, this is gonna get rough. Like, these two are gonna beat the crap out of each other, and they did not expect those chops. They were shocked. And I love to see that, you know, to see someone's genuine first reaction to this guy. It is freakish, just freakish ability in that ring. The finish here saw Sheamus. He's loading up for a brogue kick, but earlier in the match, Walter had power bombed him, and it was kind of an ugly landing. Sheamus landed around his tailbone, and so Sheamus couldn't do the full kick. He stuttered, and that allowed Walter to hit, I think, another power bomb, then the lariat. But the lariat got the win for him there, and it was a very deep lariat. Great stuff. Great stuff. Following this, we have the SmackDown Women's Championship. Liv Morgan taking on Shayna Baszler here. This was a good match. In the moment, I enjoyed it. I just don't necessarily think it's going to connect with the fans the way they want it to, you know, especially we're gonna find out on Friday if this did anything for her reputation, because, you know, people are still chanting that she tapped out to Ronda, and that's true. And I don't know if this win absorbs that, you know. But Morgan was able to hit a code breaker on Baszler before connecting with the Oblivion for the pinfall win. Like I said, it's a good match. I enjoyed it in the moment. It's just, I don't know if it's the reputation cleanser that they need for her. After this, we have Rey Mysterio and Edge taking on the Judgment Day. This is a good match. Really good match. Both, like, all three of us were just having a good time watching this, talking about how good Eddie, or how good Rey is still. Sorry, I said that really weird. How good Eddie, my God, I keep saying Eddie because I keep seeing Edge on my notes, guys. It's you know. But anyways, Rey Mysterio, really good in this match, really crisp. The finish here sees them do him and Edge do like this double team 619 into a spear thing. It's after the match that it gets really interesting. Post-match, Dominik gets into the ring to celebrate with the guys, and he just turns and kicks Edge right in the balls. Great, great low blow. Ray's like, what the heck are you doing? Why'd you do that? Boom! Dom drops him with a lariat. I pop big time. I've been waiting for this heel turn. I think it's going to add a lot to his character, and we'll talk about Raw and what they kind of did to it, or what they followed it up with so far. And while I think it's good, I think there's still some improvements they can make, but yeah. Following this, we have Matt Riddle taking on Seth Rollins. This match was surprisingly, like, it wasn't surprising from an in-ring standpoint because we all know these guys can wrestle, but it was surprisingly dramatic. I really enjoyed this match. We see Riddle get his temper messed with. I think they're going to do the same storyline they did with Dragunov in UK, where Dragunov couldn't control his temper, and so he was losing because of that. Well, I think he was winning, but at the cost of his sanity. But I think here, essentially, Rollins got in his mind, called him a loser. This makes Riddle snap. They have a lot of back and forth. Then Riddle kind of has him on the outside. He slams his face against the broadcast table, and Riddle looks for a concerto from the table. Rollins is able to avoid that, though, and then he, like, rolls back in the ring. Riddle comes in after him. Rollins hits him with a curb stomp as he's trying to walk into the ring. Then Rollins gets up on the second rope, hits another curb stomp for the win. Really good match. I think this is setting up for Extreme Rules, where Riddle is going to be allowed to showcase that anger and use it to his advantage. I really was surprised by this. Like, I really enjoyed it. And lastly, we have the main event, Roman Reigns taking on Drew McIntyre. This match was long, but it was very good. And it was carried by that crowd. That crowd wanted nothing but Drew McIntyre to win this match. Unfortunately, he did not. Towards the finish here, we see Drew McIntyre hit a second Claymore kick. Let me back up. I forgot to write this in my notes. But before the match, you could see that Karrion Kross is ringside. So they do like a little thing. They show Karrion Kross ringside. This plays in midway through the match as Drew is finally catching up some momentum. Karrion Kross throws a water bottle at Drew McIntyre. Drew gets mad at him. They start kind of jawing with each other. And then Roman hits an uppercut to take advantage. And so that's about all the involvement that Karrion Kross had. I didn't like his involvement. I think it looked a little pedestrian for him to be just throwing a water bottle. I think it should have been a little more spooky, a little more Bray Wyatt-esque, but not too far. Like, you don't want the whole blackout and then him appearing in the middle of the ring. I'm not saying that per se, but I would have liked for Scarlett to at least have, like, put the hourglass at the apron or something while Drew looks to hit a Claymore, you know? I think that would have been interesting. But anyways, towards the finish here, Drew McIntyre looks for a second Claymore kick, trying to finish off this match. He goes in for the pin, but then a mystery person pulls the ref out of the ring. Drew goes to confront him, and it's none other than Solo Sikoa. He then pulls, he gives like Drew McIntyre a jawbreaker against the ropes. Reigns hits a spear. It's over. Solo is in the bloodline. I popped huge for this. I love Solo. He's one of those guys I felt was kind of wasted in NXT, and I think he's going to do really, really good things here. And we're going to talk about him later because, you know, he's going to be on SmackDown this coming Friday. Overall, Clash of the Castle, definitely worth the watch. I think every match delivered to a great degree. Match of the night, though, definitely that Walter Sheamus match. Just so much fun. I just love to see, also, like, off track here, but I love to see Pete Dunne in that match. He was really revving up in that Cardiff crowd, and I think the fans there, they know that that's Pete Dunne under there, and so they were kind of feeding into that. So everyone's energy here was just so great. Those guys, Drew's energy was just, you could tell he's charged up by it. After the show goes off the air, Drew and Tyson Fury apparently did karaoke, because that's what Tyson Fury does after his performances. Sure, why not? But anyways, let's move on to Worlds Collide, and I'm just going to be very frank here, guys, with Worlds Collide. I know I gave a little bit of a tease of like, oh, I might pick up NXT to watch instead of Rampage. No, that's not happening. I regret ever saying that. Worlds Collide solidified my hatred for NXT 2.0, and it did not, in fact, cause a rippling change in the product. I saw what happened on NXT this past Tuesday. Looks like the same old shit, so I'm not watching it. But Worlds Collide, let's give a basic rundown here. Carmelo Hayes took on Ricochet in a fantastic match. I watched most of this match. Very good stuff. Ricochet climbed up to the top rope, went for his 630, but Hayes evaded it, got Ricochet in an inside cradle for the win. He's still a champ. Oh man, I really want Carmelo Hayes on main roster ASAP, but good win for him. Following this was the Tag Team Championship Elimination Tournament, or not tournament, elimination match. This was a little shocking. I don't understand why they did this, but I mean, I get it, but not really. I think they should have had this after the match. But what I mean by this is that Damon Kemp turned on the Diamond Mine. He attacked Roderick Strong earlier in the night as a mystery attacker, but then he also strikes Julius in the back with a chair before hitting a backbreaker, and then Prince picks up the win to unify the NXT Tag Championships. So now Pretty Deadly are the tag champs, which I like Pretty Deadly enough, but it definitely feels like Diamond Mine should have won that unless they're getting called up, which I just don't see that happening yet. But this right here, this next match, this is what solidified my opinion that I'm not watching NXT 2.0 from here on out. It's the Women's Championship Unification Triple Threat. Mako Satomura taking on Blair Davenport, taking on Mandy Rose, and the absolute wrong person won here, as Mandy Rose hit a running knee strike on both Satomura and Blair. She pinned Blair Davenport to pick up the win. Boo. Big boo. Didn't want to see that. Mandy Rose, she should just go to Maine. That was like as a performer, sure, they're fine. It's a good match. But it's the principle of it. It's the understanding that, oh, we're not going back to NXT 1.0. Because if that was the case, Satomura or Blair would have won this match. And they should have. They absolutely should have. But anyways, next up, we have the Women's Tag Team Championship match. Kayden Carter and Katana Chance taking on Doudrop and Nikki A.S.H. And Carter and Chance hit a neckbreaker 450 splash onto Doudrop for the win. Just kind of by the numbers match here. And then the NXT Championship Unification match. No surprise here, as Tyler Bate was defeated by Braun Steiner, Braun Breaker, in what is definitely the best Braun Breaker match. But Tyler Bate can carry my shoe to a 4.5-star match. So I'm not surprised by that. Although Breaker hitting that standing moonsault was impressive. I'll give him that. So Bate goes for that, like the rebound lariat that he does. Breaker catches him for the spear for an out of nowhere finish. I expected this outcome. I was rooting for Bate, of course, because Tyler Bate is just infinitely more interesting and a really great wrestler. But man, I'm really hoping for Bate to come up to the main roster and kind of do, like, if it was up to me personally, I would do the storyline they're doing with Gargano and Theory, but with Bate and Butch, Pete Dunne, and then eventually they become another tag team and then they go on a run. I would love that. So yeah, Worlds Collide solidified. No, NXT still not going to be on my watch list for a good amount of time. Let's continue on with WWE as we review Monday Night Raw. Overall, I felt that this Raw definitely didn't have the weight as the previous week's Raw, but it's very understandable. They're all coming back from the UK, so they had to use a lot of talent that didn't necessarily either didn't go to the UK or did go but weren't necessarily crucial, if that makes any sense. But I think there was still a lot to like here. We got some major story development with the Mysterios that kicked off this broadcast. Essentially, we come in, Edge kicking off the show. He's pissed. He's just absolutely fuming. Basically says that Dominic is old enough to pay the price for his decisions. This brings out Rey Mysterio. Rey tries to apologize to Edge on behalf of his son, but really not getting through to him, which I don't blame him, because I don't know. If I was Edge, I'd be pretty mad. But also, I don't, I just, this is a little bit, like, tough, because Edge does this whole spiel about, like, I've known you since you were a kid. Every time we would go on the road into San Diego, I'd stay in your house, you know, whatever. It's just like, okay, if you know him on that personal of a level, why do you want to beat his ass? Like, can't you just, I don't know, maybe it's just, like, a tough love thing of, like, you gotta, I'm trying to teach you not to go down this road at any means necessary. I guess that is the point of it, right? I guess. So anyways, Ray trying to get, you know, this apology across. Edge basically says, sorry, Ray, I'm going to kick your son's ass. Dominic, get your ass out here. Dominic does not come out at first. Rhea Ripley comes out at first. She basically says, you know, I saw the potential in Dom and I made your boy into a man. Loved it. Love that sentence there. This does eventually bring out Dominic. Rey Mysterio gets out of the ring, tries to talk to his son, and Dominic's just looking right past him. You know, him and Rhea are just as a unit, and you could clearly see Rey's desperation here, trying to win back his son before he does anything too drastic, but it's already too late. As this is happening, Edge gets sneak attacked by Damian Priest and Finn Balor. They're beating him down in the ring. Edge is starting to do a little bit of a comeback until Dominic chop blocks him from behind. Then we get the chair over Edge's leg. Finn hits a coup de grace onto it and seemingly writing off Edge for a little while, probably at least until Extreme Rules. Rey Mysterio eats a nasty forearm from Rhea Ripley too, by the way. And that's like the introduction of Dom as the newest member of Judgment Day. I really liked it. Good stuff. Following this, we have The Miz shown entering the arena in the parking lot. He is asked once again about Dexter Lumis. He said he doesn't want to be asked about that. He's like, you know, why haven't you ever asked me how I'm doing? And the interviewer goes, Miz, how are you doing? None of your business. Love that. Then Ciampa just points to the left there of camera, and you could see a car has been flipped over and is smoking. Clearly, either... So originally I was like, oh, that's Dexter, right? But now that I'm kind of talking about this, it might have been Braun, because spoiler alert, we had Braun debut here in this next match, actually. So we have a number one contenders match for the tag team championships. It's a fatal four-way tag match. Two teams start off in the ring, and then, you know, you can tag any team in, essentially. So important to know those rules, because this is really fun. It was a really good match. They gave it a good amount of time, but they did not give it a finish, and we'll talk about that when we get to it. But this match starts off with Xavier Woods and Angel Garza. They do a little bit of jarring, and then Garza rips off his pants, and he thinks, with his big old nice handsome brain of his, he tags in Kofi Kingston. So now Kofi and Xavier Woods are the legal men, and they have to face off. And so they're doing a little bit of circling each other, showing each other respect, and you think, oh, they're about to go at it. No, they do a finger poke of doom, essentially. Woods tries to lay down, Kofi covers him really quick, and all the teams come in and break it up, and then we get a bunch of chaos. It's really just a really fun spot. I enjoyed that. And then the match goes on, we have some good stuff. But before the finish could get underway, before Montez can tap out to an ankle lock, Braun on the teleprompter. Braun Strowman has officially made his return to WWE, and he just buries the entire tag division with him. He does the choo-choo train to Otis, kind of slips up a little bit, and then he puts puts Angelo Dawkins through the announce table. Mixed feelings here. Actually, kind of just all bad feelings. One, I'm not a big fan of Braun. I try to stay pretty neutral. I'm trying to stay open-minded about his return, but I'm not a big fan, and this was not the way to bring him back for me. I felt like, one, this hurt this match, two, it hurt the division, and three, it was kind of aimless. Like, it's just him destroying things, which is cool, but I felt like you could have saved this until Friday and possibly until you want him to face Roman, you know? maybe have Roman come out and just do his whole I beat everybody thing again. And then you see, maybe you cut to the back and a car is flipped over and you hear, or no, maybe you just see, you see Braun flip the car over, make his way down the ring, Braun, and then, you know, that's how it goes. That's how maybe I would have done it, just to give him a, like, an immediate story there, because he was one of the last Universal Champions before Roman. So, yeah. Anyways, though, he's back. He's in red pants that I can't stand. But, yeah, let's not harp on this. Moving on, we had Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah, the tag team champions, taking on Doudrop and Nikki A.S.H. This seems to be Nikki A.S.H. and Doudrop's last match as a tag team, from what I read. From what I saw. Raquel able to get a Chingona bomb on Doudrop, very impressive, for the win. Backstage, we see Rey Mysterio, and he's just sulking, so sad face. And then he just says, you know what? I'm challenging any member of Judgment Day tonight to fight. And we'll see how that goes later. I have some thoughts about that as well. After this, we have Kevin Owens. Well, first of all, we have Austin Theory kind of promo. Kind of aimless, but really entertaining. He's selling the effects of Tyson Fury's punch to his jaw. He gets the name of the pay-per-view wrong on purpose. And this brings out KO. KO kind of takes a shot at Austin Theory, or sorry, at CM Punk, apparently, from what I've seen, saying there's been a lot of arrogant people in wrestling, and Austin Theory is not going to be the last one, but he is the most annoying one, or something like that. Really, really good back and forth. Ends with, I think this is becoming KO's newest catchphrase, being, you know, this is the time where we just take the mics down and fight. Sure enough, they get into a one-on-one match. It's really good. Kevin Owens takes a nasty stairs bump where Theory just literally pulls his head onto the actual stairs themselves. Ugh, it just looked rough. He's able to come back, though. He hits that top rope fisherman buster that I love seeing. A pop-up powerbomb and a stunner for the clean win on Austin Theory. I think this is kind of leading Theory's story to Gargano, because as we'll talk about later, but Gargano's going to wrestle next week, and I think Gargano will win his match, and Theory will get jealous, and I think that's like the clear story there. But anyways, backstage we have Damage Control making their way down the ring before commercial, and in the background you could see Nikki A.S.H. ripping off her mask and throwing it at Doudrop. It's very subtle, very good stuff. It makes you pay attention to these segments. But anyways, they Damage Control does come out to the ring. They speak about Cardiff and about how Dakota and Io will have a tag team championship match next week. Bianca then comes out and she says that if Bayley wants a Raw Women's Championship match, then she can have it right now. And Bayley walks away. She says that she'll get that match when she's ready. She'll get the title one way or another. Really good segment. Just really good stuff. Really excited for Bianca and Bayley's match, and I'm also excited for the Dakota and Io Sky match, because I kind of think they're going to win those titles. Following this, we had the official announcement that Johnny Gargano will have his first match in 9 months next week on Raw. Didn't name an opponent, but I'm sure it's going to be just like somebody he can beat really easily. After this, we have Rey Mysterio taking on Damian Priest. Priest sets up Rey for a let me talk about like the setup for this match. I think could have been better done. Like, I like the challenge, but I think once Rey gets out there, I think they should have teased Dom accepting the challenge first. I think they should have had like Dom step into the ring on the opposite side of him, and Rey kind of hesitant, saying don't do this, and then have Priest bash him from behind, and then it's revealed that Priest is the actual point. I think that would have been a simple way to really get that point across, that Dom is kind of turning a new leaf here. But anyways, towards the finish here, Damien sets up for a Razor's Edge. Rey reverses it into a Hurricane Rana. Priest is in a position for the 619. Rey Mysterio is stopped by his son and Finn Balor. Priest then hits Rey with Lariat in the South of Heaven to get the win. After the match, Rhea says that Dominic will take out Edge next week because Poppy gets what Poppy wants, which is herself. Good stuff. like I said, really enjoy it. Just minor tweaks I think could have made it a little more dramatic, but nonetheless, I really liked it. Following this, we have Bobby Lashley. He's promoting his steel cage match tonight, later tonight for the main event. Braun Strowman is then announced to be at SmackDown. And then we get footage of Matt Riddle saying that he wants to face Seth Rollins again. Seth Rollins is seen denying, saying that he's moving on to better things, which is not true. Then we have our main event, steel cage match for the United States Championship. Bobby Lashley taking on The Miz. This is a really fun match. The Miz and Tommaso Ciampa attack Bobby before the match, getting the upper hand, putting his arm in a little bit of trouble there. Then later on, towards the middle of the match, Miz is able to hit a skull-crushing finale. Lashley kicks out at 2. Miz tries for the door. Lashley stops him. Lashley tries for the door. Ciampa slams the door in his face. Miz thinks it's an opportunity to escape, so he goes, climbs up to the top. He's coming down, and then we get a great overhead shot. Underneath the ring, Dexter Lumis appears, scares The Miz, who comes running back into the ring, eats a spear, and Lashley gets the pinfall win inside the cage to end the show. And then Dexter Lumis chokes out The Miz inside the cage. So we're gradually moving this into the ring. I really enjoyed this match. And overall, like I said, it was a fun Raw. A little bit on the more promo heavy side, and a little bit less, like not a lot of stories were greatly advanced here, but I think the ones that were, they benefited, and it was good stuff. Now, this is going to be the tough part of this show, because we're going to talk about AEW now, as you all know how this goes. We got to talk about All Out, and we got to talk about Dynamite from this past week, and given all the circumstances, it's going to be a weird review, okay? So buckle up. AEW All Out. I'm starting with the main card. I'm not even gonna bother with the undercard. There was like 14 matches on this freaking card, man. Way too many matches. So main card kicked off with the casino ladder match, which started, it planted the seeds for a great story that was overall overshadowed by the CM Punk drama later on in the night. But essentially, all the contestants in this match get beat up by masked men who then reveal themselves to be Ethan Page, Austin Gunn, Colton Gunn, W. Morrissey, and Lee Moriarty. And then, to top it all off, Stokely Hathaway climbs the ladder, gets the chip down, then he waits for the Joker. The Joker comes down to Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones. And then he's in a devil mask, by the way. He grabs the chip, match is over. We don't find out who he is until later on in the night. Really good stuff, though. I enjoyed it. The match itself was pretty hard-hitting. I like that they're including Stokely into this because he's been recruiting people for, like, months now, and it makes it feel worthwhile to see where that has led. And we're going to talk about it on Dynamite, but I feel like they need to continue this momentum, and I can already tell they're not going to, so that's a little worrying to me. Following this, we had the AEW Trios Championship match that is the tournament finals here as the Elite take on the Dark Order with Hangman Page. And this is just such a good match, as it always is when you have the Elite and Dark Order and Hangman Page in the same ring. Omega, towards the finish, he's looking for a one-wing angel. John Silver turns it into a victory roll for a near fall. Hangman Page then gets a buckshot lariat, but Omega ducks it, and he hits John Silver by mistake. Omega is able to steal the pinfall for the win, and Hangman Page's reaction to hitting it, and then his reaction to not being able to break the cover is devastating. It's really, really good stuff. It just shows that he takes every subtle bit of his performance very seriously, and I really enjoy that. Next up, we have the women's TBS Championship match. Jade Cargill, accompanied by Layla Gray and Kiera Hogan, taking on Athena. This was a fun and rapid match. I think this is going to get a rematch because of the way this match went, just like the pacing of it. But anyways, we'll talk about that. Athena hits an O-face very early on in the match, but she cannot capitalize because the baddies distract her. And then towards the finish, Athena went to hit a springboard move, but Cargill catches her with a pump kick, hitting Jaded for the win. Like I said, this was a very fast match. It is reported that this match actually went under on time. I'm guessing just because of the pacing, they kind of got carried away. So I wouldn't be shocked if we get a rematch here. It was definitely Jade Cargill's best defense, which is not surprising because Athena is an outstanding wrestler. So I hope they continue this thread and also put it on Dynamite. Following this, we have, also that last bit about putting on Dynamite. They put it on Dynamite because it's the TBS Championship. Put it on the show that's on TBS, please. Anyways, we cut to CM Punk entering the parking lot. The reporter, I forget his name, he also says, "Speak of the devil," before introducing CM Punk. So a nice little subtle reference there that I saw that some people caught. So very nice. CM Punk is then interviewed in the parking lot saying that he's not, that AEW champion Jon Moxley is not only facing Punk tonight, but he's facing all of Chicago. Which, sure, Punk, that's the story here. After this, we get Jay Lethal and the Motor City Machine Guns taking on FTR and Wardlow. And while this was a really fun match, it was ultimately pretty worthless, or meaningless, not worthless. But Wardlow hits 4 power bombs on Jay Lethal here to get the win. After the match, Samoa Joe runs down, making his return. He beats up on Sonam Singh, and then they have Sanjay Dutt in the ring. And then Finley Hardwood, Dax's real-life daughter, comes out. She breaks Sanjay's Dutt pencil. Someone punches Sanjay, and then Finley gets the metaphorical pin here. It's very fun, very good stuff. After this match, we get the match that I was most disappointed in this weekend, probably. The Triple Threat from NXT, the women division one, that was definitely the most disappointing match. This was second most disappointing. It was Powerhouse Hobbs taking on Ricky Starks. While the action was good, it just was too short of a match, and Stark gets pinned after one single spinebuster. While I love Hobbs and I'd be fine with him winning this match, I felt like they should have gave this more time and really had more of a brawl to it. And who knows, maybe they'll have like a street fight later on this year, and I think that'll probably blow people away because these two are phenomenal wrestlers, and I just love this story that they've been telling, and I want to see this come to a head in a more meaty way. Following this, we get many people's match of the weekend, Swerve in Our Glory taking on the Acclaim. It was close to my match of the weekend. While Walter and Sheamus was really good, this was really good, but the only thing that this lacked was the right outcome, unfortunately. The crowd was so behind the Acclaimed, and it was a little unexpected, I'm not going to lie, because I think everyone just expects everyone to love Keith Lee as much as I do, but that wasn't necessarily the case. They really wanted to see those titles switch hands. So towards the finish here, Bowens sets up for a Poison Rana onto Keith Lee, but Keith Lee turns it around to the powerbomb position, and they hit Swerve in Our Glory for the win. After the match, Swerve in Our Glory kind of half-assedly scissor the Acclaim in the ring. Swerve kind of doesn't want to participate in it either. Definitely showing some more heel signs there. And yeah, just it was a really good match. It's just the wrong team won there. They should have called an audible because I felt like the crowd necessitated it, and also it kind of deflated them after this match. But we're going to get a rematch. That's been announced already. For the Grand Slam show. I think that's going to be on Rampage. It might be on Dynamite, though. But, yeah, that's going to be really good. It was definitely match of the night, though. Like, overall, it was still match of the night. Anyways, we get the Fatal 4-Way Women's Championship match between Britt Baker, Hikaru Shida, Jamie Hayter, and Toni Storm for the Interim Women's World Championship. This was a really fun match, showcasing that this women's division is just outstanding, and if they had more time on television, it'd be even more outstanding, but, you know, broken record here. Hayter hits a ripcord lariat on Shida, but Britt Baker pulls out the referee, infuriating Jamie Hayter. Storm then hits a Storm Zero on Hayter, but Baker throws Toni Storm out the ring, tries to get the pin on that, and she gets a near fall. Storm comes back in, hits that pendulum DDT on Baker before hitting another one on Hayter for the win. And we have a new interim AEW Women's Champion in Toni Storm, which is a good shout. And I thought that the story progression between the breakup of Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter, it definitely came to a head here, like the beginnings of it at least, and I really enjoyed that. Next up, we get the match that surprised me when it happened, but now I understand. It's Christian Cage taking on Jack Perry, not Jungle Boy. Before the match begins, though, Luchasaurus betrays Jack Perry, hits a chokeslam on the stage, nasty like a chokeslam. Luchasaurus then carries Jungle Jack Perry back into the ring, and Christian Cage hits a spear, gets a near fall, but then hits a kill switch for the win. Very, very short match. It seems it's been reported that Christian is legitimately injured in his arm, so that's why this match had to go this way, and I'm kind of fine with it. I think the story between Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy, I think that can get fleshed out and can be really entertaining stuff. This is a good example of a story that should be on Rampage and would make Rampage feel like more important, because I think this is going to take up time on Dynamite that could be allotted to the women's division, where, you know, they don't get much time, and I think this should be a Rampage feud where it builds someone up and it's interesting enough that I think it would get eyeballs, but that's just me. Following this, we had the Lionheart Chris Jericho taking on the American Dragon Bryan Danielson. Really fun match. I was kind of surprised watching this. How, you know, I think Chris Jericho, he's a very controversial figure personally, and I don't agree with him pretty much on anything personally or philosophically, politically for sure. But I think the man can go in the ring, and I think he's super entertaining, and I can't take that away from him. I really can't. He's one of those guys who has reinvented himself and so many times with outstanding characters that now he gets to call back to those, you know, and even give them just more depth. Having Lionheart Chris Jericho be the Chris Jericho version that he uses for the Jericho Appreciation Society, all about sports entertainment, is really good. Like, it's not what you would expect. It's not the character you would think. You would think more of his character in like 2008 with spike hair using big words, but this really works. It's such a great justification for him holding the title of best sports entertainer. But anyways, though, Jericho does have to cheat in this match to get the win. He has Danielson leaned over in the corner, gives him the low blow from behind, and then Jericho hits a Judas effect for the win, and we'll get a little bit more about that in a minute. After this match, we have House of Black taking on Miro, Darby Allin, and Sting. It's a Sting match on pay-per-view. You know he's not going to lose. It's really fun, though. Nearly my match of the night, but towards the finish here, Darby Allin hits a stunner on Buddy Matthews before hitting a tope suicida. Then Sting gives Malakai Black the Black Mist, allowing Darby Allin to pin Malakai with the Last Supper. After this match, it was seen House of Black hugging, and then Malakai Black giving a bow to the crowd, really starting up the rumor that, oh, he's done. And sure enough, as I mentioned earlier, his contract has run, or he has gotten a conditional release from his contract. So it's a good way to go out, man. It's a really good way to go out. After this, we had Tony Schiavone interviewing Daniel Garcia backstage about the Jericho match. And then Jericho comes in, interrupts him, and Garcia just tells him that he let him down for cheating in his match. And Jericho says that Garcia, he had to do what he had to do, and now you're going to have to do what you have to do against Yuta for that pure championship on Dynamite, because I'm not going to be in your corner. Following this, we have the main event of the night. Not my favorite match, to be honest. I think, just like I said earlier, even without the media scrum, Punk was already having go away heat with me, and him winning this in such a babyface way of, oh, I'm championing Chicago, like, not my thing at all. And I think Mox deserved way more from this, but anyways, start of this match, CM Punk's hits a lot of offense. A couple of roundhouse kicks, the knees in the corner, short arm lariat, the anvil elbows, then he hits a GTS for a near fall. It's really setting the tone that, you know, he's at this new 100%, as he said. And then Towards the finish here, he hits a third GTS for the win, becoming a two-time AEW World Heavyweight Champion for the shortest reign in the title's history. Then the lights go out. We get a voice message memo. You can hear Tony Khan arguing with somebody about giving more money, showing up at the casino ladder match. And then we get footage from an old promo from CM Punk. And then the masked Joker appears on the screen, takes off his mask, put on a Burberry scarf, and it's revealed to be MJF. He gets a huge ovation from the crowd. Probably didn't expect that to happen, but or they didn't expect the ovation to happen. It was pretty clear that was MJF the whole time, but yeah, really good stuff. Immediately overshadowed by the media scrum, but yeah. Well, let's just get right into Dynamite, actually, because this is pretty heavy on MJF here in the beginning. But first, the show, the opening package to the show does not have the Elite, and it does not have CM Punk, so that was interesting. Then we have the show officially opening with Tony Khan saying that in a pre-tape message that he is vacating the Trios tag team titles and the heavyweight championship, and a new heavyweight champion will be crowned at Grand Slam. And there's a tournament for that. It's a very small tournament, which I'm glad, because they did not need another tournament this year. I think this is like their fifth one. And then new Trios champions would be crowned tonight. Well, we get that match as the opening match. But before that, we have a couple promos here. The world-renowned, loved MJF. He comes out to a standing ovation here, and he plays up to it. Just completely BSing his way, just so smug about it. He addresses the audience saying that he's sorry for all the offensive things he said about Buffalo in the past, and he's promising to be a leader in the future of this company. Jon Moxley comes out, interrupts him, tells him basically drop the shit, and immediately MJF goes off. He's like, God, I hate being in Buffalo, New York with these stinking moronic marks and all this stuff. It's really good. I really enjoyed this promo here. Basically, Moxley then says, shut up. I'm either going to fight you, or you're either going to leave, or I'm going to make you leave. And so MJF, he's pretending like he's about to fight Mox. He takes off his shirt one sleeve at a time, although one sleeve did get stuck to his wrist for a very long time, but then he just rolls out the ring. I forgot to mention all the things that MJF says to this promo. Once he like drops the nice guy act, he basically says that the AEW World Championship means nothing to him. It's just a bargaining chip for the bidding war of 2024, and that he can't wait to take the title to a real wrestling company referencing WWE. Then he says, you know, he's going to be there with the roadster Cody Rhodes and his hero Triple H, the Game, and there's only one con he wants to work for, and that's old Saint Nick. Really good stuff. Then Mox scares him off. Mox gets the mic, basically says how much the world title means to him. It's the only worldly possession that he cares about, because it represents the passion and the drive he has for this business and for everyone else in the back. Really taking like a leader position here. And it was very genuine. I really enjoyed this. He even said, I wasn't even supposed to be here. I was supposed to be on vacation. But now he's here and he wants the ball. And he wants to run with it. Just really proving that Moxley should have never lost that fucking title. Anyways, though, we get that opening contest for the World Trios Championship match. Best Friends taking on Death Triangle. I really thought Best Friends were going to take this here. But both teams are just extremely popular, so, you know, either way, it was a win-win. Towards the finish here, we see Death Triangle, all three of them, hit simultaneous super kicks and Canadian Destroyers. And then Pac hits Chuck Taylor with the Black Arrow for the win. Really good match. Highly recommend you watch it. After this, we had the Dark Order interviewed. Basically, John Silver explains that he's injured following Hangman Page's lariat. And then Alex, the assistant, interrupts him, trying to recruit 10 again for Andrade. And Dark Order tries to get him to go away. This brings in Rush and Andrade. And Rush is kind of fired up, trying to fight everyone. But Andrade is like, cool it. And he gives Ten back his crutch that I guess fell over. So a little subtle kindness there. Really getting better at recruiting people, Andrade, instead of trying to buy people. I think, though, he might be just trying to take his mask off, because it seems like that's what he likes to do. Anyways, following this, we have a, let's not call it an eliminator, let's call it what it is, a championship contenders match between Toni Storm and Penelope Ford. This match really won me over on Penelope Ford. I hadn't seen a lot of her matches, mostly because they're on Dark and Elevation. So I really enjoyed her character work here. She did not pick up the win, though, as she countered a Northern Lights suplex into that pendulum DDT for the win. After this, we get a vignette showcasing Action and Bronson getting physical at All Out. I forgot to mention that in 0 Hour, Action Bronson shoved Matt Menard and Angelo Parker off of Hook after their match. So now it looks like we're getting a tag match at Arthur Ashe Stadium for Grand Slam, probably with the Rampage of it. Should be a fun match. Action is like a really good rapper, and he's a really intimidating looking guy, so I think this is a pretty fun outcome. After this, we get the Acclaimed, and the crowd were so ready to hear this rap. I was ready. I was like, oh, what is he going to say? What is Max going to say? And before Max can get to his rap, Swerve interrupts. His music comes over. Just Swerve, no Keith Lee here, which I like. I like that Swerve is such an instigator. But he comes out, basically just says that the Acclaimed as tag champions would be a joke. Then Daddy Ass gets on the mic, tells him to go away because this is Daddy Ass's house now. I really liked it. After this, we get a little segment of Chris Jericho explaining that Ponce de Leon was searching for the Fountain of Youth, but he couldn't find it. But Corazon de Leon found that Fountain of Youth, and they've been drinking it in, man. And then just washboard abs out. It was a good little segment. He says that he will win the AEW championship back, because no one can take away his locker room from him. And then Sammy Guevara says that he's going to beat Darby Allin in the tournament. And then they kind of close it a little weak with just Sammy saying, look how sexy we are. It's a little gross. But yeah, I forgot to talk about the tournament. So we had first round matches, or one first round match tonight being Hangman Page and Danielson. So the winner of that match would take on Chris Jericho, who had a first round bye. The winner of that match moves on to the finals. In the other block, you have Sammy Guevara taking on Darby Allin. The winner of that match would take on Jon Moxley, who has a first round bye, and then the winner of that match will go on to the finals. What it's looking like is Danielson taking on Jericho. So that's my official prediction for the finals, and I can see Moxley, Danielson taking on Moxley in the finals, and I can see Mox getting the win there, but I don't know, because I don't want him to be a transitional champion, because it kind of seems like MJF with that casino chip, they might use it as a Money in the Bank type situation, so he might cash in on Mox immediately after his match with Danielson. I wouldn't be shocked if he did that. Anyways, though, moving on, we had the TNT championship being defended by Wardlow against Tony Nese. Tony Nese loves touching Wardlow's titties. We get a powerbomb symphony for the win here. Wardlow tries to powerbomb Mark Sterling, but Josh Woods pulls him out of harm's way. Then Wardlow cuts a really good promo, a really refreshing, acknowledging that his momentum has kind of been sapped away, and he's here to remind everyone in the back and anyone watching at home that this is Wardlow's world. And I don't love that catchphrase, but I'm glad that he was able to talk and really start to get some momentum under himself. I think the best story he can have right now is with MJF, the guy who originally sucked his momentum away, but I just don't necessarily see that happening. But I think that would be my route to take with that. After this, we get a banger, absolute banger, nearly my match of the week. AEW tournament match, opening round, Hangman Page taking on Bryan Danielson. It's these two guys again. It's Hangman, Danielson, 3. Stellar stuff. Just go watch this. The end of this match saw Danielson get set up for the Buckshot Lariat, but he reverses it into an O'Connor roll with a bridge for the win. That's Danielson's only win over Hangman Page. Up next, we get a really good Jungle Boy thing yet, basically says that Christian has to get surgery, but that when he comes back, he's going to take years off his miserable life. I love that line. And then Jungle Boy starts talking about Luchasaurus and how he betrayed him, and he says that, you know, my back's been hurting for carrying you for all these years. Everyone told me how much of a liability you were. Too silly, blah, blah, blah. It was a really good promo. I'm very impressed by Jungle Boy when he cuts these promos. Like, this is genuine heat, and I liked it. I liked it a lot. Following this, we have Stokely Hathaway and his goons coming out. They have a mic in hand. Before Stokely can really say anything, this guy cuts him off, like one of the producers. They beat up the producer, and then they kind of just leave. A little weird. For me, he should have been there when MJF first came out. They should have had like the whole squad behind him. And then Moxley stepping up to all of them would have been a great visual. And still scaring off MJF. And maybe Morrissey stepping up to Moxley. Really like building some seeds there. So it was a very weird segment. I hope they address the fact that he gave the fucking chip to MJF. And honestly, right now, I don't have that much faith that they're going to do that. So we'll see how that goes. But I tell you what, this main event, absolutely killer. Hey, yo, we had West Side Gunn. This is so good. West Side Gunn bringing out Daniel Garcia in this ROH Pure Championship match between Garcia and Wheeler Yuta. He performed Dr. Birds, which is an absolutely great song that I think should be Daniel Garcia's music from here on out. This match is just freaking good, like so good, and the crowd is hot. They're in Buffalo. They want to see Garcia win this, and luckily for them, Garcia is able to lock in the Dragon Tamer and just sink it in deep, gets the submission win. After the match, Yuta and Danielson both shake Garcia's hand, and this infuriates Chris Jericho. He looks like he's been cheated on. He just caught his wife with another man, or another woman, whoever. So it was a great ending to the show. I got to see West Side Gunn perform live, and then now I get to see clips on Instagram with Danhausen and West Side Gunn interacting, and I think it's so cute. It's so great. Anyways, if you haven't listened to West Side Gunn's latest album, it's fantastic. He has a great line about missing the Grammys 2 years straight to watch wrestling. I absolutely love, but as well as Jesus Crack is a really good song on that one. That was Dynamite. Someone said this best. I should have wrote down their Twitter handle, but someone on Twitter said this felt like a return to normalcy, and I agree. I think this was a really strong Dynamite to bring, you know, kind of some harmony back into the fans' relationship with this show. Bringing back some of those big names that you don't need the Elite for. It was a really good Dynamite. I wish the Elite was there. I'm not gonna lie. I don't wish CM Punk was there because I really don't want to see him for a little while. That's my take there. Let's move on to the preview for next week. For SmackDown, this coming SmackDown, the only thing I could really find was that Braun Strowman will be on SmackDown, which we talked about earlier. But also Solo Sikoa is going to be on SmackDown. On Raw, you can expect Johnny Gargano to have a match, as well as that women's tag team match between Io Sky, Dakota Kai, taking on the tag champions of Aaliyah and Raquel Rodriguez. More matches were announced for Rampage this coming Friday, which there's already spoilers for, but I didn't read them. We have the ROH World Championship match being defended, Claudio Castagnoli taking on Dax Harwood. I think that's going to be a banger. I'm going to definitely tune in for that one. Then we have the AEW World Championship first round match. Sammy Guevara taking on Darby Allin. My prediction, again, I didn't read any spoilers. I kind of think Darby has this because Darby versus Mox is just a fantastic matchup. But we'll see. Madison Rae is set to take on Serena Deeb. That's going to be a really good match. Now I'm saying that out loud. Samoa Joe will make his appearance, so he'll probably get challenged by somebody. Wouldn't be surprised if this sets up that match between himself and Sonam Singh. And then for Dynamite, we know that the semifinals will happen on Dynamite. Bryan Danielson has been confirmed to take on Chris Jericho, as we talked about, and Jon Moxley will take on the winner of Guevara and Darby Allin. But anyways, you guys, that's all I have this week. Like I said, this was a stacked episode. It was crazy. I still think we're going to get more news about the repercussions on Punk and Ace Steel. We might have more news as I'm recording this. So, yeah. Thank you guys for listening. Please leave a rating and review anywhere you're listening to this on. Subscribe to the YouTube. We are available on there now. And, yeah, just have a good one. Thank you, guys.